Good evening, everyone. My name is Joan, and I'm an alcoholic. And I wanted to thank Tom for asking me to... Not Tom, John. He's not here, so Randy, you're going to have to do that. And thanks to Rosie and Charlie for having me over for dinner to calm me down before we came here. And basically, thanks to everyone that still comes to AA, because I have been around for... I've been sober for a long time, but I haven't always been in AA. And I wanted to thank you for being here when I came back. And Stuart, you did an excellent job. I love when you said that the veil was lifted. That was one of the things I took from you, because it's just that second that we get. And if you're new, grab it, because the veil might come down and not come up again. And I really, I wore my cowboy boots so I could stay calm, and I really liked your belt. getting sober before you're 21, that's an incredible. We were talking at the break, and it was like, gosh, but at least you got to taste some of the drinks I've never gotten to taste. I mean, if you've been sober more than 20 years, I mean, some of the drinks that are out today, I'm like, oh. A chocolate martini? A chocolate martini? Seriously? Wow. You know? Let's see. My charge tonight is to share with you what it was like when I was drinking, what happened. Basically, I found God and I chose a different way of life. And what's my life like today, which is just incredible, incredible, incredible. And also to share with you my experience, strength, and hope. And hope is what kept me coming back and kept me here. And so that's what I really want to leave with you, is that there is so much hope in these rooms. And if you have a bottle in your car, you have a bottle in your pocketbook, you don't have to drink again. This new way of life can be offered to you right now. And I heard at my Monday night meeting, first I want to take a shout out to my Monday night people, we group. And to my Wednesday night meeting, Santee. Yeah. Yeah. But Charlie shared something on Monday night that I want to offer all you newcomers, that you could do it. He said that he was at a meeting one time and he was very new and he was afraid he was going to drink, and he said, "Look, I'm turning in my I'm claiming my newcomer rights. That you have to talk to me and you have to take me out after and you have to keep me sober." So that's our job here, is to help you stay sober. So ask us. Don't go home and don't get that bottle that's waiting for you in your car, because you don't have to. And I also like to start with a joke, because it also calms me down and I like to hear the laughter in the rooms. And the joke is this. An optimist says the glass is half full. I always get these mixed up. And a pessimist says a glass is half empty. An alcoholic says, "You going to finish that?" But I got some bad news if you're laughing at the joke, because if you're laughing at the joke, you're probably alcoholic. Forget the 20 questions, because I have I've told this joke to normal people and they don't laugh. They're like, "That's not even funny." Anyway, I'm a member of the CIA. I'm Catholic, Irish, and alcoholic. My father was an AA. My mother was an Al-Anon, and very active in both of the programs. And so I grew up in a sober house. There was no drinking at all. And the life they had is the life that I'm starting to have. They were always going to AA functions and always going somewhere and going on retreat. My mom would be making a new dress, and they'd be going to some sort of dance or some sort of fun event. And there were seven of us, and most of us are alcoholics, and drove them crazy. But when I was a child, I was just fearful of everything. There were seven kids, my mom and dad and my grandmother in the house, and I couldn't sleep at night. I would just lay awake afraid that something was going to get me. And I didn't really ever finish it, like what would happen, but something was going to happen. And my brothers and sisters would feed me and go, well, you know, I think he's going to come in that. Well, your bed's closer to the window, and, well, you're closer to the stairs. So I had these glow-in-the-dark rosaries that I just held on to and just prayed and prayed. And sometimes I wonder why I don't have a problem with the God thing, because I grew up Catholic. I still have the God of the church, but it was the fear that I had. I needed something. So when people say they don't have a God in their life, it's like, wow, you must not be afraid as I am. Because I was afraid of everything. And when the lights went out, oh my God. And my daughter got a little bit of that fear, so I gave her a glow-in-the-dark rosary. My son, because of his fear, he taught me to say, I love you. Because before him, I never said, I love you to anyone. My parents didn't say, I love you. And I don't hold anything against them. That was really, to me, I think it was very generational. I think that the men and women at the time just did not express themselves. And my son would go in his room, and it would be dark. And my house was a regular track house, so I was maybe 20 feet away from him. And he would be like, I love you. You know, just like in one of the books, it says whistling in the dark, so that someone else is still awake. And I used to go, that's all right, I'll stay awake. When you're asleep, you let me know when you fall asleep, and then I'll go to sleep. But we would say this, I love you, and I love you, and I love you, and it got me to say I love you, because I hadn't said it before. And then I saw a movie where someone said, I love you to the moon and back. So I started saying to my kids, I love you to the moon and back. And what an incredible thing. My dad, I think he told me that he loved me for the first time. I was about 28 or 30, and honest to God, I hung up the phone. I said, my father's dying. Because I had never heard it. I had never heard it. I'm not even trying to be funny. And so, let's see, I was about 13 when I had my first drink of alcohol. Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill. Yeah? Now I'm going to tell the truth most of the time. I have a couple lies I'm going to tell, but as far as I know, the person that got us the alcohol, we were 13 years old. As far as I remember, we each had our own bottle. You know, we might have passed around a bottle, but we were 13. Of course, we got blitzed. We went to a party, and my friend threw up. You know, and so it goes down red, comes up pink. But I didn't, right? I didn't throw up. But I probably would have kissed you if you had, you know, Stuart. Really, I. You know, you brought back this memory when I was in high school. You know, I was not the one that had all the boyfriends, trust me. And so this one guy, we were really drunk, he puked, he still wanted to kiss me, so I was like, all right. Anyway, so I'm in high school, and I'm drinking, like you said, as often as I can. Okay, I'm not a daily drinker, but as often as I can. And in junior year of high school, when I was 16, my mother passed away very suddenly. I went to my junior prom. My brother went to his senior prom. My sister was at her eighth grade trip. It was one of my other brother's birthdays. And when we came home, she had passed away. And I came home at like 7 o'clock the next morning, drinking a beer, 16 years old, drinking a beer, pouring it out in the gutter before I walked in my house and saying, oh, my God, my mother is going to kill me. And so she had passed away. Now, my father went into a complete and total nervous breakdown. He had no idea what to do with us. And I took advantage of that. So he had no idea what time I was supposed to go to school. So on the days I drank before I went to school, he didn't know it was abnormal to leave the house at 5 o'clock in the morning. He didn't know that. He didn't know what time we came in at night. He didn't know how to cook. He didn't know how to do a load of laundry. So I took advantage of it. My one sister would go, you look like you've been crying. And I'd be like, yeah, I have. You know what? I wasn't. I was like out smoking pot. Anyway, I moved to California in 1979. I moved to California and moved in with some people from my neighborhood, and one of those men became my husband and the father of my two fantastic kids. I'm so blessed with two great kids. And the thing we had in common was alcohol. Every time I drank, the purpose of drinking is to get drunk. I mean, I don't even understand. I went out to dinner with a friend. She ordered a martini. She had two. I'm not even making this up. These are not the two lies I'm going to tell. She said she had two sips, and she says, "Oh man, I can really feel it." She pushed it away, and she ordered an iced tea. And the rest of the dinner, I'm staring at it, I'm watching it, and we're leaving the restaurant. I'm like, "Oh my God, oh my God." You know, that's normal drinking. You know, I know some normal drinkers today, and I wasn't one of them. In the doctor's opinion, where it talks about the cycle of addiction, when I ingest alcohol, I do my spree, I do things that are not normal, you know? And the only thing that can stop that cycle for me is God. And so now, 79, I'm out here, I'm doing my thing. I graduated from San Diego State in 1982. And my father came, and three of my brothers came, and one of my sisters came. And my father is a sober member of AA, and we are not. Okay? And we totally and completely disrespected him. We partied up and down constantly. And at the party, my brother was totally out of hand, and I'm like, you know, you're going to go, but these are my friends, and I'm pretty sure that's his wife, you know, that you shouldn't be hanging out with and doing those things you're doing. So that's 1982. In 1984, I have my daughter. It wasn't until I came in the meet, when I came to the program, I wasn't an alcoholic. I went to Al-Anon first because he was an alcoholic, right? And that's what my mom was in Al-Anon, and she was married to an alcoholic, and so it wasn't me, it was him. And so I'm in Al-Anon about 6 months, and the La Mesa trolley stop opened, and we were going to go. They were giving free rides from whatever to whatever. And so, like a good alcoholic family, we were packing up a cooler beer to go to the La Mesa trolley stop to ride the trolley with two tiny kids, you know. You know, when we took the kids to the beach, I would certainly play with them as long as only one hand was involved. You know, this was back in the day when you could drink on the beach, you know. So as long as I could have one hand on the beer, I could play with you with the other hand digging the sand or whatever. But that's as far as it went. So that night, after the La Mesa trolley stop visit, the drinking continued, and we were watching Cops, the show Cops on TV, and then the cops came to my house. You know, we were watching ourselves on TV. Then the cops came to the house. And a little bit of domestic violence, you know, just a little bit. And I don't know. He said I hit him with a beer bottle. But I really think if I hit you with a beer bottle, you'd be bleeding. So there was no blood involved. So whatever. So I was telling my Al-Anon sponsor, you know, and we were drunk and we did this and we were blitzed. And she's like, you know, back up just a tiny bit. And I'm like, what? She goes, you never said that you drank. And I'm like, well, because it never came up. So she said, maybe you should go to Al-Anon. I mean, maybe you should go to AA. And I always say that I have a high bottom, but really, for me, it was a really low bottom. And then I wanted to back up because I always like to tell this story, not like to tell it, but my kids walked. They both walked when they were 10 months old. So Catherine, she's my oldest, she was more than 6 months because she could sit up, but she was less than 10 months because she wasn't walking, and I was blissed. And I was just angry that I had these kids. They were so in my way. Okay? You know, I got to do what? Constantly. So I was really blitzed. I put her in the bathtub and went in and took a nap. And for whatever I feel about this man that was my husband and whatever things happened, transpired between me and him, he saved her life that day. And he saved my life that day. So my bottom is not as low as it should be because I should be in prison right now. She should be dead and I should be in prison. That was kind of how my alcoholism went. The piano was dropping behind me all the time. And one more time, like Rosie was saying there, one more time I just kind of got by. You know, So I came to AA, and I wasn't really an alcoholic. I was just here because he really needed to go to AA. So I really didn't even say I was an alcoholic. And I was astounded by some of the things you people said. Astounded. I can't believe you would drink while you're pregnant, you know. And it wasn't till I got sober that I remembered. I did too. That I was blacked out when I was pregnant. That I was constantly drinking while I was breastfeeding. That I would put a movie in, leave these kids run around when they had no business to be running around freely, you know. And so, let's see. Now, I wanted to mention the International Convention. I'm trying to go ahead chronologically, and here comes where one of my lies comes. Because Rosie and Charlie, some of my best friends in the room, they were at in 1995 it was in San Diego. And I had asked one of my sisters to come out who had just gotten sober. So she came out, and Rosie and Charlie were there, and I didn't know them, but one of the lies I'm going to tell you is that I met... Let me see how I should make this. I helped Rosie. Rosie was kind of lost one night, and she came up and asked me for directions. No, but anyway, she was there, and such an inspiration, because on that night they said, we want to move to San Diego, and they did, and I'm really impressed by that. But we're at the International Convention. I have my sister. I'm toward the bottom of the seven, and she's the oldest. And somehow we meandered into the Al-Anon gift shop or whatever they have there, right? And she turns and looks next to her, and she says, "Oh, my God, GURP." And it was my mom's best friend from Al-Anon. And at this point, my mom is... Well, she died in 76. I don't know. Long time. She's gone a long time. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I don't know anyone that knows my mom. I don't know anyone that knows anything about my mom. So tell me. And she hung out with us. And we went, and I took her out to dinner, and we went out. You know, I don't know if I took her out to dinner, but we went out to dinner. And sometimes that can be a little grandiose, but she, you know, I said, tell me what she was like as a person. And did my mom and dad love each other? What was their relationship like? And she spent a lot of time with me and told me a lot about my mom, and that was priceless. That's the gift of this program. It's like, you don't know what you're going to get when you give a little bit. You're going to get tenfold back, tenfold. So then I stayed married till about 2002. And then now I'm on my own. And at that time, I knew I was going to need some help to stay sober, some more help. And I really needed to get around some men that I could learn to trust men again and feel that they were okay and feel that it was safe. And so I came back to AA and you took me in. And another thing I did when I came back, which I didn't do, the first 14 years, I didn't have a sponsor. Now the last almost 8 years, I have a sponsor that I work with a lot and I follow direction. And I ask her, before I take an action, I'll ask her, a big action, I will ask her, what do you think? You know, so sometimes I'll ask my friends, well, what did your sponsor say about that? You know, and they're like, what? And you know, the relationship with a sponsor is so important. See, when I very first came in, I heard it too. And I was like, and I asked people, will you be my sponsor? And they said to me, well, I'm full, but you can call me. But I take phone calls. And I'm not even trying to be funny, but I was like, in my head, I'm like, why would I call you? What would I talk to you about? And then I had a couple who didn't like what I did, and they fired me. And I'm like, I was a little bit more defiant than I am today. And, you know, I said, well, they're only suggestions. It says right here. Right? It's only suggestions. You can't tell me what to do. And somehow, especially in this last year, I've really been able to give up some of that. And another gift that I got this last year is the gift of imperfection, that I've embraced my imperfection. I came across this book that's not AA approved called The Spirituality of Imperfection. And in there, he says that's where God is. God's in the imperfection. That's where you're going to find him. In fact, at dinner, we were talking about Charlie's mom is a quilter. And I said, well, I quilt, but I'm not a quilter, right? Because just like I swim for exercise, but I'm not a swimmer. And thank you. And back in the early 1800s, when the women made quilt, they would purposely sew in a mistake because they said only God is the perfect one. So none of the quilts could be perfect. So Charlie was telling me, what country was it? Some country where they have a lot of mosaics. They do the same thing in the Middle East. They do the same thing. They put a mistake in because God is the only perfect one. So let's see. So then soon after I was divorced, someone called me from AA and said, well, for $1,000 you can go to the Hawaii convention for 10 days and we're going to island hop. And I was like, okay. You know, so I've traveled more in the past since I've been divorced and the past few years. But so I got to do that. Then in 2006, oh, thank you, Bill. That makes up for all the nasty things you were telling me at the break.
Wow.
Wow. In 2006, another thing I'm hoping that you hear from my story is that I'm not a big believer in that you can think your way out of this. That's not what the book says. It says you're going to need to take an action, bring your body, and the mind will follow. So in 2006, my daughter was studying in Italy, and she said, why don't you come? And I was like, I don't think I can afford it. This is going to be the first full year I've been divorced, so I had no idea what my taxes, if I was going to owe, if I was not going to owe, and I just couldn't commit. But I just got my passport. Okay. The first Catholic priest in AA, his name was Father, they called him Father John Doe. His name is really Father Ralph Fowl. And he wrote the Golden Books, and he wrote a bunch of books, right, that back in the day we used to refer to and listen to and talk, read about and stuff. And he says, when you pray for potatoes, you better pick up a hoe. Okay, you're going to have to, the potatoes aren't going to come out of the ground. Potatoes aren't going to come out of the ground unless you help it, you know. And in the AA, now I hear in the rooms, I hear, pray and move your feet. So I didn't know what my tax return was going to be like, but I got my passport. So then I get my passport, because that takes time. Then my tax return comes, and it was way higher than I thought it was going to be. And I said, heck with it, I'm going to go. Well, I don't know if I can afford it. So I look online. I found a $500 ticket from San Diego to Rome round trip. Inside the plane, yeah. So, you know, the program is meant to be worked. Sobriety is not for the weak. It's not for the weak. It takes a lot. I'm telling you what I would love to do every day. I have major depression. I'm prone to depression. What I would love to do, stay in my room, turn off the phone, close the blinds, eat myself to death. Now, I might not drink. But I'm going to kill myself. You know, I'm going to slowly kill myself and isolate and get away from everybody and let the thoughts, one negative thought lead to another negative thought, lead to another negative thought, till like none of you like me. And I'm by myself. And you know what? You're kind of crazy anyway, and I never really did like you, and I'm really not alcoholic. He was the alcoholic. So take steps. Keep taking steps to, if you're in some sort of a funk, talk to your sponsor about it. Find a sponsor that you can be honest with. Find somebody that you can talk to. See, with my sponsor that I have right now, I would kind of test her. And I would kind of tell her a little bit of truth. And she would go, honey, I did that. And I go, oh, okay. All right, how about this? When she still loved me, then I learned to love myself a little bit more. Then I could love you and stop being so judgmental of you. When I stopped being judgmental of myself, I was able to stop being judgmental of you. So, you know, you can stay sober without a sponsor, because I've done it. And, you know, I say the past 8 years, I have had so much growth compared to the past 14 before that. And I wish I were not divorced. I wish I didn't break up a family and my kids didn't have dad's house and mom's house. I hate that. And Christmas here and trying to, you know, I hate that. And I say to her, I wonder if I had worked the program as hard as I work it now, then would I have had to get divorced? Would that had to have been my choice? You know, who knows? You know, who knows? You know, I don't really think divorce is God's will for me. I think that I take actions. When someone says, oh, it must be God's will that blah, 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 I'm like, well, you know what? I could convince myself it must be God's will to drink. If I find a parking space right in front of the door, right? Must be God's will that, you know. So, someone told me recently, I heard a woman with 40 years, and she said, God's will is when you have done everything you possibly can to either make it happen or not happen. Then you leave it go and you leave the results up to God. And in that movie, Rudy, where he keeps asking the priest, like, how am I going to make this happen? And the priest said, have you done everything that you can to make this happen? Okay, then let it go. Leave it. Leave it. And that's how God works in my life. You know, people say that Catholics have a punishing God. Well, you know what? I understood God as a child. You know, now I understand God as an adult. You know, I can look at everything as an adult. So, for people that I sponsor that have left their faith or that have no faith they used to, it's like, well, yeah, you were 8 years old. You haven't been to church since you were 8. How can you know what God is like? Now you're 40. Now you're 50. You might want to just be willing, like Stuart was saying, just be willing to consider something different. So fast forward into last year, I completed my master's degree at the University of San Diego. John, are you sleeping? It looks like you're sleeping. Darn, now I'm going to get a complex about that. Now that you mentioned it, I did get a limousine ride here today. People were like, did you come in that limousine? I'm like, yeah. Yeah. Before I forget, the other lie I wanted to tell is that Rosie's father was an AA too, and she's from the Jersey and New York area, and I'm from the Philly and Jersey area, so I have told her that our parents, or both of our dads, were at the same meeting at the same time, but really I just made that up. But I want to believe it. But last year, 2009, in 2009 I completed my master's degree at the University of San Diego on a campus, on a place where I feel the Holy Spirit's whirling around. It's the most beautiful place, and it's such an honor and a gift to be able to go to school there and to actually graduate from there. You know, like, I have a bachelor's degree, but it's worth basically nothing because I was blitzed the whole time. And and I'm good at cramming for tests. And I know the information that's on the test. But 3 weeks from the test, I couldn't tell you what I even studied, you know? So my brother comes to my graduation. One of my brothers that came to my graduation in 82. And he's an active member of NA. And he has like 26 years in NA or something. So he comes, and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. Didn't think anything of it. Well, he ended up telling me that he came to my graduation to make amends to me for the destruction that he did at my first graduation. He's like, you know what? It was one of my last things on my list. And never thought I'd be able to make amends to you for that ever. And he's going, 27 years later, he comes out here to make an amends for that crazy graduation. Weird part about it, though, my dad says to me at the time in 82, well, where are their meetings? And I don't know why I knew where the PB Olano Club was. I don't know why I knew it was there. But I used to walk up and down the street. I lived on Tourmaline or Turquoise. And I used to walk all the way down to, you know, to Garnett, you know, look in the shops and stuff. And so probably I asked what's going on here or something. And he belonged to a club in Philly, so I knew what AA clubs were like. So when he's out here, he says, you know, where can I go to an AA meeting? I said, well, there's one great couple down blocks down from me. And so he went there, and he drove my stick shift. This is another part of my really disrespect to him. He hadn't driven a stick shift in probably 40 years. And so he was really, like, stalling and going like this. And I was just like, oh, my God, what an idiot. What an idiot. And then I remember when I dropped him off at the airport that he came out of the bathroom and he had, like, something on his shoes. And I thought he had peed on his shoes. And I'm like, oh, my God. And, you know, I don't even know who that person was. Just so, so disrespectful. And the weird part about it is the Olano Club was where I went for my first meeting because I sent him there and because I knew where it was. And I went to the Gong Show last night. It might have been the Gong Show. I'm going to look on the date. First AA meeting I went to was May 20th, 1989, and at the Olano Club. So if it's a Friday night, it was the Gong Show. I'll have to check the date. I mean the day and the date. So let's see. It's coming close to my time. I wanted to just finish about my kids and a little bit more about fear. That my fears are my fears, okay, as a parent. I don't get to put my fears on my children. So my daughter right now is traveling in Europe for 7 weeks with a girlfriend. That freaks me out, okay, freaks me out. For some reason, I don't watch TV. I purposely avoid the news and TV because I like to live in this little bubble where bad things don't happen. And so somehow, I don't know why, but I saw this movie, Taken. So this is before she told me she was going to Europe. And those of you who don't know, it's about these two American girls that go to Europe and they get taken. And Liam Neeson saves one of them. And so I call her up and I go, this is before she told me she was going to Europe. I'm like, oh, my God, I just watched this most horrible movie. Do people really do that to people? And she's like, who told you you can watch that movie? You know, it's starting. The cycle of life is already happening. She's telling me what I'm allowed to watch, you know? So she comes to me and she says, I'm going to go to Europe for 7 weeks with a girlfriend, and all I can think is, Taken. I don't get to give her my fear. My fear is my fear, right? And I said, that sounds fantastic. I hope you have a great time. And, you know, whatever, we planned it out and whatever. She's having a fantastic time. And she'll be home on Friday, this Friday. And, you know, she has her own God. He watches over her and is taking care of her. And he's taking care of me, then I'm not thinking about it every day. You know, and then there was something going on while she was over there. high alert, and I sent her an email. I'm like, there's a high alert. The Secretary of State is saying there's a high alert. And she writes back, all is calm. All is calm. But this is the girl that I almost drowned. And my son moved away. He came home from college one Christmas, and then he didn't leave. And, you know, in the book it says, it's not right to be dependent upon a parent too much. And I'm like, dude, these are your choices. Full-time job, pay rent, move out. Okay? I said, to me, Jim, to me, it's not good for a man to live with his mother. Okay? So, you know, these are your choices. And he moved to Chicago. He has a full-time job. He's totally self-sufficient. I don't give him any money. And so I'm so proud of both of my kids. And that's because I ask you. I come to meetings. See, when they came to drinking age, because they were 4 and 2 when I got sober. When they got to drinking age, it got a little hairy. Because they drink an awful lot. And they exclude me from things that they're going to. If there's a party where there's going to be a lot of drinking, I don't get invited. And I got my feelings hurt. And I came and I talked to you and I said, what do I do with this? And my sponsor's like, how often did you call your dad when you were 22? I'm like, oh, yeah. So, but I'm an alcoholic. And I learned to set boundaries with them, to tell them how I feel, to tell them how I expect them to live their lives, and then I have to let go. You know, so I wanted to finish with my daughter. I said she's coming home next week, the girl I almost drowned in the tub. She sent me a email. Oh, for some miscommunication, we'll just call it, she was going to be alone in Europe for 4 or 5 days. Now she's remembering taken, you know. And so she went to England first and stayed with some friends, and then she had this time that she was going to be by herself. And people talked her into going to Barcelona, that it was a really friendly place and good food and cool, and you'll be safe there. So she went to Barcelona, but she wrote this to me on the night that she was in Barcelona. She said, I was so freaking scared to come to Barcelona. I literally stayed up all night last night thinking about this place and how I would be alone. And I laid with my glow-in-the-dark rosaries. And missed my mom. When she was young, she was such a go-getter. And I used to say to her, name one thing you haven't done. And she'd go, basketball. I'd say, have you played basketball? And she'd go, done it. Softball? Done it. You know, and so she says, then my mom told me, not only in my head, but in my life, that there is nothing I have not done. I am in my cocoon, her little, she has a little bit of OCD, so she always sleeps in something. Yeah. I don't know where she got that from. So I'm in my cocoon after drinking sangria and having tapas with a lovely Aussie girl. We are both traveling alone. I told her, you are so brave for traveling alone. And she said, no, you are. And I said, my mom tells me that. That was my only response. So thanks for making me me. Thanks for making me brave. Thank you for supporting all my dreams. To the moon and back. Okay, thank you.